You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 17 November. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender. The Fed's billboard went all hawkish yesterday around interest rates. We'll dig into that. And with markets at all-time highs, and should we be worried about next year? Keith McClatchy on storage, why he says it's the best REIT in the world. And then Grant Field from Fed Group on impact farming. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. SA retailer quietly launches bank account to 20 million customers. This is ShopRite, and they have literally just sort of over time built up to it. Now, boom, they've got a bank account with just a single transaction fee, and you can transact at every till point in the thousands of ShopRites, USaves, and Checkers across the country. Business Day, transaction capital upbeat as it enjoys some COVID-19 tailwinds. COVID-19, it's putting pressure on the taxi industry, but certainly a bump for the second-hand market. Remember, they bought We Buy Cars, and that did incredibly well. And then they've still got that debt collection business, which unfortunately does well in a pandemic. Morning markets, US was green overnight, S&P up 0.4, NASDAQ up 0.75%. Asia's red this morning, Sydney off 0.8%, Tokyo almost 0.5% down. Commodities mixed overnight, gold $1,856 an ounce, Brent $81.80 a barrel, palladium moving stronger, $2,168 per ounce. Rand much weaker, 15.52. Top 40 looking for a 25-point red opening. That's fractions of a percent. That is Tencent trades up 0.9% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Viv, appreciate the early morning. Federal Reserve, James Bullard, he, I think, is a St. Louis Fed chair. The Fed folks are always talking and engaging, but yesterday he was giving a speech, and he got quite hawkish on us. And essentially he said that tapering could potentially increase to $30 billion a month. That would then open the door to rates by the end of the first quarter of next year, which is very hawkish and a lot quicker than most have been expecting.
Yes, most certainly. But I would take that with a pinch of salt. Yes, he'll be a voting member next year in the Fed, so you'll have some impact on the decisions. But, I mean, remember, Powell, who's in charge of the Fed right now, was a Trump appointee. Biden will probably face pressure if we see the Fed starting to hike rates. And that has obviously the likely negative connotations of slower growth, a drop in the stock market, et cetera. Mm-hmm. He's probably going to be under a bit of pressure to try and maybe change Powell for somebody else, or put pressure on Powell, even though he's supposed to be independent, to not raise rates. I strongly believe right now the central banks aren't truly independent at the moment. They do take a lot of feedback from government and from society as a whole. And I don't think any central bank governor out there is going to try and be too aggressive with regards to tapering all rates, even in the face of slightly higher inflation.
So is that, I mean, are you then thinking maybe second half of next year, or are you in the 2023 camp for U.S. rate increases?
I do think we might have, some increase next year, but I do think it's going to be very tentative and very slow. I don't think we're going to get back to normal rates, anytime soon. And any, tantrum thrown by the market or, some drop in terms of employment or in terms of economic growth, et cetera, will probably be taken as a immediate sign to reverse, tack. I just think that, the long-term fixed inflation, the real pain that comes from inflation takes a long time to come about. And, in a political environment, long-term, negatives are usually ignored longer than they should be.
Yeah. And you say the Fed, or you say central banks aren't particularly independent. There's almost, they've got two masters. One is, governments, presidents. The other is the market. I mean, if the market throws a tantrum, we have certainly seen the Fed quite quickly reverse rates before.
Oh, yes, most certainly. I mean, the reason that we've had such low rates for so long, I mean, 2008 was like 13 years ago, even before COVID happened, it was over a decade ago. And yet, we weren't right back at normal interest rates at that time. Markets had done a huge run for a very long time. I do think the problem with inflation, like I said, it's a long-term corrosive factor. And, you know, any political, you know, kind of institution has really big, issues with trying to tackle any long-term political factor, any long-term pain. Inflation will be a problem if it's, let's get it out of control, you know, 5 years down the line, or even 10 years down the line, as we start worrying about, you know, double digit and plus inflation. And, I think that's the problem, that the guys that are in charge of these things really have no incentive to care about the long term.
Yep. And then, I mean, a quick last question. Markets then at all-time highs. My thought was if we start seeing rate increases early next year, could get messy. But if no rate increases, this market can carry on running.
It could be. If we do see rate increases, remember, a lot of the growth has come from really speculative stocks. I mean, look at something like Tesla, for instance. A lot of its growth, a lot of its performance is based on future growth. But you have high inflation rate, as an economist will tell you, or the Carter will tell you, your discount rate goes up. That means that all future growth is discounted to a bigger degree. And that means that you're going to see decreasing valuations. So we could see the tech sector, especially stuff that's more speculative, under a huge amount of pressure because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll wait and see. We'll keep an eye on that. But Viv Govender says, he's not convinced about those early rate increases. Viv Govender, Rand Swiss, appreciate the time. Our poll today on our LinkedIn and Twitter is just that. When do you think that rates will start to come? And if they come next year, is it going to hurt? Will it be fine? Or perhaps it's going to be 2023? Have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning. Talking storage, which I own and I assume you own, because you put a tweet out yesterday which stated, and I quote, easily the best REIT on the JSE, possibly in the world. And you put a bit of disclaimer as far as your filters can tell. Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you because I hold it. But what is your sort of key story around why you think it could be the best on the JSE and perhaps the world?
Morning, Simon. Y'all just throw me the big question. But so at its core, storage is self-storage property asset class that it has is quite unique. First of all, it's deeply defensive. There actually aren't that many of these sort of assets around the world. I think there's, and I could stand corrected, there's only 11 pure play self-storage businesses in the entire world listed. But even beyond that, when you look at storage as a defensive underlying, it in fact is growing very, very fast. So it's currently in a sweet spot, probably for the next, you know, 5-10 odd years as it ramps up and its pipeline comes through. It's really growing very quickly. And couple that with the fact that it's got a very, very conservatively geared balance sheet. 25% LTV is the sort of gearing that Redefine and GrowthPoint dream about. Like they wish they had 25% LTV. And finally, the final thing is when you look at their valuation, they're really, really cheap from almost every single metric you look at. I mean, they're on about an 8% forward dividend yield relative to these assets around the world that trade on about 2-2.5% forward dividend yields. Price to book, they're only about 1.1, whereas most of these assets globally trade at 1.5-2.5 times book. And it's worth noting that that's relative to a tangible book. Storage, in fact, big asset is their internal manco that runs these properties. Because they've almost got 40,000 individual leases. How do you manage and price those correctly and create a natural and effective churn that you can push through higher pricing and really sweat the underlying assets? And in fact, on top of all of that, they're starting to go into JVs, and running other people's properties, and which it all really combines. to you've got a defensive underlying that's in fact growing above market, very, very conservative balance sheets in the background with a high quality, intangible internal manco at arguably very, very cheap valuations. And in fact, when you filter it versus the world, it is absolutely, it stands out head and shoulders as one of the best REITs out there. And I stand behind that statement.
I mean, you did put an image up in the follow-up tweet, which did support. And I take your point. I mean, that LTV 25%, absolutely astounding. Occupancy in the UK 94%, which is practically full. That technology that they've got, they're now actually sort of not licensing that out, but third parties will come to them and say, your tech is great. Can you manage our storage? But what I perhaps like most is you mentioned that growth over the next 5 to 10 years. That could be scary, but they kind of grow cautiously. They're doing a JV with Nedbank. They've done a JV with the founders before, which I thought was weird, but actually worked. They do a lot of bolt-on. They're not going to go out and sort of drop a billion rand on something. They're growing carefully and step by step.
Absolutely, and there's deep barriers to entry in this industry that are not immediately apparent as well. So if you build a shopping center or an office or even a warehouse for distribution or something, you can get it pre-tenanted. You go to the big blue chips and you get them to sign leases. You take those leases and you go to the bank and you get funding and you build this thing and, it's actually surprisingly straightforward, which means the barriers to entry for most property classes are actually not very high. And that's why you get very marginal returns on them. Self-storage, there is no way to pre-tenant self-storage facilities because it typically is dealing with people like me and you. So do you walk through a neighborhood and get 10,000 people to sign pre-tenant before you can't? So you've got to build it. All of their builds are almost spec builds. That's the nature of the beast. And then you've got to ramp up that tenants to arrive at a break even and to move into profit. That creates, now not anyone can fund that initial operating loss on an individual property. And that creates a barrier to entry, especially once you've reached the critical mass. You've got a diversified a portfolio of them, and you can start to build these things and bolt them on and even run other people's using the same internal platform and really generate that upside that is hard to replicate.
Yeah, and I take the point, and I've actually chatted with them before. It's almost a tech advantage. It's that, and it's everything from Google and Facebook ads to all the other bits. They've got a really, really solid technological underpin, which I think really gives them a good lead as well. We'll leave that there. Keith McLachlan, Investment Officer, Integral Asset Management. Appreciate the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Grant Field, CEO of Fed Group. Many of you know Fed Group for their participation bonds, but a little over 3 years ago, they also launched some impact farming. Grant, appreciate the time today. I don't remember chatting back then. I remember there were concerns around folks saying, will we get the sort of returns yet? Impact farming, it was blueberries, it was beehives, it was solar panels. How's it gone in those 3 years?
Simon, I think it's excellent to speak straight after a pandemic and to test something straight after a pandemic. But I think the short is that our models have stood up to what we planned them to be. Mm-hmm. And so far we're pleased with the results and the models are holding up.
You're getting, I remember, I mean, the important distinction which a lot of folks didn't get is, for example, the blueberries, you invested, the returns are IRR. It's not a sort of dividend payment for the rest of life, etc. You were targeting a little over 10%. Has that sort of come through? I mean, it's still early days, I suppose, in a degree.
every one of our models have the internal rate of return taking into account, for example, a blueberry bush gets planted, the first season, second season, etc. As it goes along, you earn more until eventually the bush dies and is no longer. And at the moment, we are on par with where we expect to be in all of our models. It's quite interesting. During COVID, we had a 1-in-100-year frost event, for example, which came along and therefore will reduce returns. Yeah. But equally, we were able to secure better price because there was less supply of blueberry bushes. So the models are still on track. So, you know, it's got the ups and downs, but so far they have sort of balanced each other out and they've all done really well.
Yeah, and I take the point on that. I mean, this isn't a linear payoff such as a fixed deposit or something. This is impact farming. And COVID in of itself, I mean, I imagine some challenges, maybe, for example, in solar and the installation and the like, but probably a business that could more largely continue through the harder parts of the pandemic.
Well, I think this is the great part, is that so many businesses were so badly interrupted. Impact farming had minor interruptions. So, for example, on certain buildings, if you didn't have the occupancy that you previously had, there was some curtailment in terms of some of the solar sites. But, you know, that is a long-term investment, and people came back to work in some or other form. So, largely speaking, that was untouched. Things like the beehives did really well because it was one of the few industries that was allowed to carry on doing what it does. And, yeah, we really are pleased that the results, even the hardest of times, have met our expectations and in many cases even exceeded them.
Which was your most popular over the 3 years with the initial, the solar panels, the beehives and the blueberry bushes?
Beehives have always been the most popular, but they're always the hardest to find supply. So everyone wants a beehive, and no matter how many we are able to introduce, they're gone almost straight away. But solar panels and blueberry bushes are two very different price points, quite different characteristics. And so they're both very popular after beehives.
I know in my circle, it was all around the blueberry bushes because everyone was eating them for breakfast and was like, yes, get a slice of that action. Well, what you're now also doing is you're bringing in some new products, macadamia trees and moringa trees.
Yeah, absolutely. The plan was always to bring on a number of different products. And having launched the platform originally with solar, we then went and added blueberry and beehives. And then COVID came along. And so I think we were very cautious during COVID. We made sure that what we were running, we ran well. But now that, you know, COVID has not passed, but certainly there's some level of normality in the world again. And yeah, we recently, 6 weeks ago, we introduced, as you say, moringa and macadamia.
What is a moringa tree?
I didn't know this myself either, but it is essentially a tree where there's, it creates these green, essentially, they take the leaves and they crush it up, and it essentially gets sold in stores such as Dis-Chem and the like as a supplement.
Okay. And is trees, I mean, intuitively, I would think to myself, hang on, a tree's perhaps longer. I mean, I know like in some of the avos and stuff, it's 3 to 5 years before first crop. Is there a delay such as that, or have you got slightly mature trees already?
Yeah, absolutely. So macadamia trees typically take about 6 years before you'll get any sort of a harvest from that. So we've actually secured trees that are already mature, and therefore when you buy on the platform from year one, you're getting returns.
And is there synergies here? I mean, is it, you know, do you almost, although I imagine not if you're buying mature trees where you could, you know, you've already got some blueberries, perhaps there's even a beehive lurking there and you can put the trees next door. But I'm suspecting that this is going to be different geographies and locations.
Absolutely. I mean, we at the moment, every single time there's a new deployment of something, we, you know, there'll be a piece of land or in this case, an existing farm. But where there are synergies is, for example, if one looks at the macadamia trees right now, we are now working with the farmers to ensure that they have bees always there to ensure that the pollination is as good as possible. And again, from a platform point of view, we're helping to work with the farmers to make sure we've got the right cover crops and the like to make sure the bees are always healthy. So you can see that the synergies are not blueberries next to macadamias, that's not a synergy, but the synergy is definitely around bees and some of the other agricultural expertise that we collectively working with experts to increase the yields of all the products.
Are your bees transitory? I remember reading an article years ago how in California the bees for the almond trees would actually be trucked in to pollination season. I mean, are they kind of in one space, or can you move? Can a farmer phone you up and say, "I need some bees"?
Absolutely. So we kind of have a collection or two different models. So some bees are moved around from place to place. But we really care about the livelihood of the bees. And so pollination, if pushed too hard, bees work too hard. So for us, it's really important that we're making sure the bees are looked after. And I think that's what we really like about, for example, the macadamias, is we're working with the farmers to try and put in full-time beehives. But if you've got full-time beehives and you don't have the right crops to look after the bees, then the bees will not be as strong as they should be. So that's where, for example, creating different crop types. We've actually got five different other crops that we plant near the macadamias to make sure the bees will be looked after in the season when there's not macadamia.
Yeah, bringing truth to the phrase, the queen bee. We'll leave it there. Grant Field, CEO, Fed Group, talking around the impact farming. Grant, appreciate the time today. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, we were chatting with Jane Manette of PwC Africa on COP26. We got a deal of sorts. Is it enough to slow global warming and save the planet? Two-thirds of you were like, too late, we're heating up. A third of you were saying, we'll be fine. Have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nicole, Nabuchle, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.